Greetings, Radio Derb listeners. That was one of Haydn's Derbyshire Marches, and this is your genial host, John Derbyshire, here to escort you through another week of laughter and lunacy, courtesy of National Review Online. The on-air light is flashing, the sound engineers are at their stations, our producer is giving me the signal, and we're ready to go. I'm sure that Radio Derb listeners, as well informed as you all are, know about the 1972 law, commonly referred to as Title IX. Just to remind you, the law says the following thing, quote, "No person in the United States shall, on the basis of sex, be excluded from participation in, or be denied the benefits of, or be subjected to discrimination under any education program or activity receiving federal financial assistance." End quote. Title IX is notorious for having killed off many college athletics programs. Since women don't want to play college baseball, for example, and since a college that had only men playing baseball would face a big fat Title IX federal lawsuit, college baseball is well nigh extinct. The words of the Act, as I just read them, though, don't even mention sports. The Act applies to any educational activity or program. If a college physics program, for example, only has 20% female enrollment, well, what's that if not discrimination? Since, as we all know, women would flock into physics programs if not held back by the cynical, self-serving manipulations of the cruel and oppressive patriarchy. Now we read in a news item here that the National Science Foundation, NASA, and the Department of Energy have set up programs to seek out sexual discrimination at our universities. Investigators are taking inventories of lab space, and they're interviewing faculty members and students in physics and engineering departments at schools like Columbia, the University of Wisconsin, MIT, and the University of Maryland. Now, as Richard Spencer points out over at Taki's magazine, art history departments are 95 to 100% either females or gay males. The art history department at Duke, for example, has 35 fully funded graduate students. 29 of them, to judge by their names, are women. Will the National Endowment for the Humanities be conducting a Title IX investigation to remedy this disgraceful situation? As Richard Spencer says, don't be holding your breath. Barack Obama sets off on a foreign tour next week, starting in Berlin. The idea for Berlin was to remind everyone that Obama, like John F. Kennedy, is a youngish U.S. senator with diddly-squat in the way of executive experience, but a really winning smile and a good line in fluffy Emersonian rhetoric about hope, opportunity, bearing any burden, paying any price, the trumpet summons us, and all the rest of that gaseous pap. Obama's taking a few slight risks here. His efforts to acquire a fake Boston Brahmin accent to go with his collection of other fake accents, like the fake homeboy accent that he uses with black audiences, may come to naught. You pretty much have to be born in Boston to talk the way they do. It might occur to some watchers also that running a daycare center in Chicago, or whatever it was that Obama did in that brief spell between Columbia and Harvard, is not quite as impressive as having a PT boat sunk under you by enemy action. Still, jolly good luck to the senator. Come back to us soon, dear leader. As Horace implored the mighty Augustus, Lucem rede tuae dux bone patriae, instar veris enim vultus ubi tuus ad fulsit populo, gratior it dies et solus melius nitent. The torch has been passed to a new generation of Americans, tempered by community organizing, disciplined by a hard and bitter struggle to figure out how black we are, proud of our country for the first time in our lives, and unwilling to witness or permit the slow undoing of those affirmative action privileges. In other news from Berlin, congratulations to 19-year-old Nikolai Sajin, who this week won the World Championship of Chess Boxing. Chess boxing, a sport in which, quote here from the Associated Press report, which I'm hoping is not a hoax, combatants switch back and forth between boxing and chess, repeatedly putting their gloves on and taking them off, so that they can move the pieces around the board without clumsily knocking them over, end quote. It was Marcus Aurelius, I think, who said that life is more like wrestling than dancing. Looking back on my own life, I'd have to say that chess boxing is a better metaphor than either wrestling or dancing. Be that as it may, it seems to me that this is a trend that could catch on. Watch out for bridge tennis, cribbage pool, and perhaps backgammon basketball, or for those with oriental inclinations, karate go, or for us sedentary older types, Scrabble bowling. Scrabble bowling, I could go for that. Any challenges? Meet the Arab world's new hero, 45-year-old Samir Kantar. Mr. Kantar was freed this week from an Israeli prison as part of an exchange in which Israel got the remains of two of its soldiers back. Kantar has been in prison since 1979, when he was captured by the Israelis after carrying out a heroic action against an Israeli family. He'd broken into the family's house in the middle of the night, killed the husband of the family in front of his 4-year-old daughter, and then heroically clubbed the little girl to death with his rifle butt. The girl's mother and 2-year-old sister were hiding in a crawl space, and the 2-year-old was accidentally suffocated by the mother's attempts to keep her quiet. Samir Kantar is, in other words, a typical hero of the Palestinian cause. On arrival in Lebanon after his release, he was greeted by cheering crowds and introduced by Hezbollah chief Hassan Nasrallah. Samir Kantar made an eloquent little speech to the adoring multitude, saying, quote, "Thank God we arrived at this day of victory, never to return to a day of defeat. Thank God who gave me strength and who always gave me hope in moments of weakness. Thank God who gave me the ability to endure, challenge, and face imprisonment. Thank God who resurrected in this country a resistance, this great Islamic resistance." End quote. Well, you can thank God all you like, pal, but lots of luck getting anyone to sell you a life insurance policy now that you're at large. Some encouraging news here on the law enforcement front. A company that owns 11 McDonald's restaurants in Nevada was fined $1 million this week after pleading guilty to knowingly employing 58 illegal immigrants. A former vice president of the firm pleaded guilty to inducing an illegal alien to remain in the USA, and he faces a possible sentence of up to 5 years in prison and a $250,000 fine, which, as far as I'm concerned, is letting him off lightly. Not only did the firm knowingly employ the illegals, it even helped them to steal the names and social security numbers of citizens. Amongst other things, this confirms the suspicions a lot of us have had about McDonald's chains and franchises. It's all kind of a shame, though. Those of us who were around in the 70s have a sentimental attachment to McDonald's, which was the first of the big fast food chains we ever patronized. I can still say, 2 all-beef patties, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions on a sesame seed bun. As a matter of fact, I can say it in Chinese. Zhuan cang chun niu rou, du te jiang liao jia shang cai, qi si yang zong suan huang gua, zhi ma mian bao gai shang qu. It's always sad to see mementos of one's salad days, if you'll pardon the expression, being dragged through the dirt. But McDonald's have only themselves to blame. Our own Mark Krikorian tells us that McDonald's is widely believed to be the company with the largest number of no matches. That is, W-2s filed by the employer that have fake or mismatched social security numbers. You can't be sure of this because the Social Security Administration reports on no matches without naming names, but strong circumstantial evidence points to McDonald's as the nation's biggest scofflaw. As Marx says, quote, if this prompts McDonald's into doing what Dunkin' Donuts did a couple of years ago and requiring use of the e-verify system in all franchise and company stores, it would have a big impact. End quote. E-verify is like when a store swipes your credit card, only it's done with a social security card. Stores have been swiping credit cards for 30 years, and now, finally, government is catching up. Well, 30 years, that's just the blink of an eye in government time, you know. Anyway, well done, guys. You deserve a break today. It is with great sadness that Radio Derb records the passing of Mak Erot, an Indonesian lady. In Indonesia, you just get one name, and that was hers, Mak Erot. It's not Mrs. Mak or Mrs. Erot, it's just Mak Erot. I know you never heard of Mak Erot, but trust me, she was famous throughout Asia. What was she famous for? Well, that's a little tricky to explain on a family podcast. Suffice it to say that she was famous for making longer what was felt by its owner, who was invariably a human male, to be not long enough. Mak Erot performed these miracles of lengthening by a combination of herbs and Islamic prayers. She began her career attending to the Japanese soldiers who occupied Indonesia in World War II. Starting from there, her business grew and grew. And if you think this topic is kind of gruesome, well, let me tell you, Mak Erot, definitely gruesome. Well, so it's said, anyway. Personally, I think the whole story is a bit of a stretch. Now, Mak Erot is dead, aged 100-something. Nobody knows exactly how long she lived, although no doubt she wished it was longer. Her herbal remedies and the wording of her special prayers were closely guarded secrets, but fortunately for the underendowed of Asia, she passed them on to her grandson before she died. He has now taken over the family business there in Jakarta, and I hear that his list of clients just keeps getting longer and longer. Radio Derb was one of the first to break the news several weeks ago that Mr. Dudu Dien, a lawyer from the West African country of Senegal, acting as the United Nations Special Rapporteur on Racism, was to tour the USA to report on racism in our country. Well, it is with joy that I now report that Dudu, I hope nobody will mind my referring to the Special Rapporteur by his first name. I'm told that it's a way of showing honour and friendly respect over in Senegal. Dudu has now completed his tour of inspection. I hope somebody was following him round with a scuba. Dudu is now preparing a report for the UN General Assembly next spring. What will he report? What do you think? Doodoo, it says in this news report here, quote, focused on U.S. shortcomings, such as resegregation of minority communities. The expert on racism has cited racial bias in the criminal justice system and has talked about how underfunding of public education plays a role in deepening racial inequality. End quote. In the course of his visit, which I'm sure I do not need to tell you, was at the invitation of the federal government, in the course of his visit, Doodoo went to New York City, Chicago, Los Angeles, New Orleans, Miami, Puerto Rico, and Washington, D.C. In Miami, he heard testimony from Sofiane Abdelaziz Zakout, director of the American Muslim Association, who discussed issues related to immigration, racial profiling, and discrimination against the dress of Muslim women. You know Muslim women. They're the ones who aren't allowed to drive and who are clubbed to death by their male relatives if they smile at an infidel. Wait a minute, though. Is Islam actually a race? Isn't it really, like, a religion? I mean, isn't Cat Stevens a white guy? Oh, what the heck. When do we get to send a special rapporteur to Senegal? To see how things are over there? To see if these figures that I'm looking at are really true? Infant mortality, 60 per 1,000. Life expectancy at birth, 57 years. Unemployment rate, 48%. GDP per capita, $1,700. I wonder what proportion of Senegal's population would come and live in racist, Islamophobic America if they could. My rough guess, 99%. OMG! Or possibly LOL. Down in North Carolina, the Department of Motor Vehicles, otherwise known as the DMV, has gotten itself into a spot of bother. You see, they've been issuing license plates to motorists with license numbers generated randomly by computer. Well, the computer generated several thousand plates containing the letter combination WTF. Not only that, but the department's own web page featured one such plate as an example, with license number WTF5505. Apparently, now don't ask me, I have never sent a text message in my life. Apparently, WTF is favoured by text messages as a way of expressing baffled surprise. Well, the DMV got on the case PDQ once they were notified, and motorists in the Tar Heel State who don't want to have WTF license plates can now exchange them free of charge. What the heck was that department thinking of? If you still don't believe that the Multiculturalist Project is Leninist totalitarianism in thin disguise, listen to this. Over there in the nation of my birth, there is an outfit that rejoices in the name National Children's Bureau. It's not exactly a government department, but it gets a lot of government money. Around $20 million, as near as I can figure. Well, this NCB, this National Children's Bureau, has just issued a 366-page guide for people who are in charge of preschoolers. That is, childminders, people who run daycare centres, playgroup leaders, and the like. The report is titled Young Children and Racial Justice. The report says that toddlers as young as three should be scolded for racist attitudes. An example of such an attitude would be saying yuck to foreign food. A toddler who says yuck to foreign food is racist, you see. The report encourages childminders to report as many racist incidents as possible to local authorities for further action, which I suppose means that these racist tots will get a visit from the police. The report also suggests cultivating the home languages of new immigrants. Quote, English is now viewed as the major language of the world, but this is not because it has any innate linguistic advantages. It is because English is the language of power in a world dominated by English-speaking peoples. End quote. Oh, the report also says that anyone who disagrees with its recommendations must themselves be racist. Wow. I was so shocked when I read this story in the London Daily Mail, I got on the phone to my sister, over there, across the pond, to see if it was true. Unfortunately, she wasn't able to tell me. At the time I called, she was just on her way out the door to go and attend a 2 minutes hate session down at the local anti-racism centre. In the Don't Call Us, We'll Call You department, ex-President Bill Clinton has declared that he is now ready to campaign for Barack Obama. Well, what he actually said, the way I heard it, was, quote, I am eager to campaign for Barack Hussein Obama in any district of the country where Barack Hussein Obama feels that his gratuitous insults to working-class white people have turned voters off. I will also be glad to speak on behalf of Senator Barack Hussein Obama to the many women's organizations that he has scorned and humiliated in his efforts to ensure that there will be no female president in our lifetime. End quote. Senator Obama has responded by saying that he has put ex-President Clinton's name on his list of approved campaign speakers, right next to Jesse Jackson's. Mixed news for dogs in Peking as the Olympic Games approach. On the one hand, the city authorities have banned the sale of dog meat and dishes made from dog for the duration of the Olympics, so as not to offend the sensibilities of visiting foreigners. The authorities in Seoul, South Korea, did the same for the 1988 Olympics, you may recall. On the other hand, long-standing rules on dog ownership are being strictly enforced as part of the general tidy-up that the city of Peking is undergoing. Dogs taller than 14 inches are officially banned in Peking, and if your pooch exceeds that height, he's going to get swept up by the dog patrols and will very soon find himself drinking from God's toilet. So, Peking will be free of dog meat dishes, but it will also be free of tall dogs, at least for the duration of the Olympics. It will also be free of dissidents, defined to mean anyone the authorities even think might cause any trouble. The category includes, most recently, two Catholic priests, Zhang Jianlin and Zhang Li, who have been hustled off into labour camps along with other troublemakers. The CHICOMs like to tell you that when European powers had their foreign concessions in Shanghai back in the 1920s, one park in the British zone had a sign at the entrance saying, No dogs or Chinese permitted. It is in fact highly doubtful that any such sign ever existed. The only known records of it are photographs put out by the skilled photoshoppers over at party propaganda headquarters. Still, the story might give the CHICOMs some ideas. How about signs all around Peking saying, "No dogs, dissidents, Tibetans, Uyghurs, Falun Gong practitioners or Catholic priests permitted"? There you have it, ladies and gents. The news of the week, lightly seasoned with some foreign languages. One classical, one modern. Good enough, I hope, to satisfy our multilingual, democratic nominee presumptive. I guess I should throw in some Spanish, too, ready for those compulsory Spanish classes we'll all have to attend down at the community centre when Wonder Boy becomes president. It's going to be tough finding the time, what with the 20 hours of compulsory community service we'll all have to do every week under the Michelle Obama Act. Though, I guess with all those evil corporations shut down at last, there won't actually be much else to do.